It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, the Justice Department released a redacted affidavit last Friday on the FBI warrant obtained to search former President Donald Trump's property in Florida. We'll find out what we can and can't learn from that filing. First, gun violence is a big public health problem in the United States, and it's gotten worse in the last couple of years. Gun violence generally, mass shootings specifically, have been on the rise. 2022 is no exception. There have been over 300 mass shootings this year so far, using one common definition, averaging more than one a day. Our next guest is a violence epidemiologist. Violence epidemiologists look at the problem of gun violence in the same way they might look at contagious diseases, as a society-wide problem that can take many layers of prevention to solve. She says even though there's not one magic solution, a combination of ideas can make a big difference. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about how we can research and find out what's likely to cause gun violence? Do you think we need a better understanding as a nation about the risk factors, what to do about them? Is there something maybe in your own community, a program, a law, something else that you think helps make violence less likely? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. Caitlin Jedalina is an epidemiologist and publisher of the newsletter Your Local Epidemiologist. Caitlin, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I think a lot of times we might think of a gun violence, a homicide, suicide as, I guess, gun problems or crime problems. What do we learn when we look at it as a public health problem?
Yeah, it is a very much a public health problem, not only physical, so injuries or death, but also mental as well. And the impact, for example, mass shootings has on a community and on perceived safety in schools, for example. And so as a violence epidemiologist, we try and look at how, for example, guns and gun violence impact not only that immediate safety and health, but also the health of our long term and how we can better have a quality of life.
One tricky thing is that, you know, with a lot of diseases, a lot of money might go into researching the causes, the spread, prevention, treatment, things like that. You've written lately that that really came to a halt in the United States, at least in the federal level, when it came to funding of gun violence research. What happened?
Yeah, that's right. So this lack of funding really started back in 1993. There was this famous study published in the New England Journal of Medicine that found that having a gun in the home increased the risk of homicide in the home, which I don't think anyone is too surprised about. But this really set off a political domino effect. And essentially, we got this thing called the Dickey Amendment, which was inserted into the CDC spending bill by Congress, which basically said that no funds could be made available to injury prevention and control used to advocate or promote gun control. And the language was all very unclear, but really no federal employee or researcher was willing to risk his or her career or the agency's funding to find out. So what happened was that research money essentially dried up very quickly. And this set gun violence research back decades. And that's because our research is mainly funded by this federal money. So we couldn't conduct any of these large population-based studies. Fortunately, this didn't stop nonprofit foundations from funding this research. Also, fortunately, just recently in 2020, for the first time in 25 years, our federal budget included about $25 million for the CDC and NIH to research gun-related deaths and injuries. And I will say this seems like a lot of money. $25 million would be great to have in my bank account, for example, but it's not enough to reflect the public health crisis. There was a study in 2017 that estimated we need about $1.4 billion to curb the gun violence epidemic.
Now, you've written, and others have, about a Swiss cheese model of public health. We've heard about it some with COVID-19 prevention. First of all, what do we mean when we talk about a Swiss cheese model?
Yeah, I think we're all familiar with the Swiss cheese approach to COVID-19. Basically, the overarching theme is that one solution is perfect, right? So when we're talking about COVID-19, a vaccine isn't going to just be the magic silver bullet. Masks aren't going to be the magic silver bullet. Ventilation and filtration. I mean, it takes all of these layers to really stop the virus and to protect ourselves. And so, yeah, a few weeks ago, I adopted the Swiss cheese approach to be applied to gun violence. And the overarching theme is that no solution is perfect, but we can add enough layers to slow down or eventually block the opportunity for disease. And in this case, it's firearm deaths. And I think this, it's important to recognize that this needs to be executed not just at this individual level responsibility, just like it's individual level responsibility to get your vaccine, but also community and policy level responsibility.
Let's look at some of the different elements of this model. The one you write about first is safe storage. And this is one that individuals can do with firearms, but you also hope to see campaigns to encourage safe storage of firearms. Can you talk about what you're hoping for and the impact it might have?
Yeah, that's right. I think it's one of the lower hanging fruits in an individual level approach is to have a gun safety and gun safe gun storage. About 42% of homes have at least one firearm. And unfortunately, a lot of kids, if we're looking at that kid perspective, live with unlocked loaded guns. And so I think that this is, you know, firearm owners need to focus on safe storage and understand risk factors that can lead to crises. I also think that firearm owners can be our leaders in this and help change cultural norms around what is safe and responsible for firearm ownership. And really engage with those voices, as well as I think there's a responsibility, if, even if you're not a firearm owner. For example, if you're a parent, there's a 1 in 3 chance your kid is going to a friend's house with firearms. So just like you'd ask about pets or allergies or supervision before the kid enters the home, you can also normalize a question as asking if there's an unlocked gun in their house as well.
We are talking to Caitlin Jedalina, an epidemiologist who focuses on violence, also publisher of the newsletter Your Local Epidemiologist, saying there's a lot of little things we can do to help prevent gun violence, gun fatalities. Add them up and they can make a big difference. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your questions for our guest, changes you'd like to see made. Do you want to see more, for example, federal funding of public health when it comes to the impact of firearms? Do you want to see more encouragement of gun locks at home, gun safes? Have you adopted that yourself? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Another personal responsibility you're hoping to encourage is building relationships and helping mentor children, I guess, to help prevent them from committing acts of violence in the future.
Yeah, and I think this is really focused on, I mean, there's all types of different gun violence, but when we're looking at particularly mass shootings, one of the main predictors is isolation or these long-term frustrations coupled with lack of support. And this can be devastating to not only the child or the mass shooter, but also obviously the community. And so I really think that we need to create these healthy, honest, really long-term relationships with kids in the community. And so that means we can volunteer as mentors at after-school programs like the Boys and Girls Club. And so this is getting not directly at the gun violence, but really those constellations of causes underneath the surface that can prevent downstream effects.
And you raise a good point that I'd meant to bring up earlier. When we're talking about the impact of firearms, we could be talking about suicide, we could be talking about domestic violence, we could be talking about mass shootings, gang violence, whatever. There are a lot of different kinds of gun impacts and different. We might need different solutions for the different ones. It might not be one size fits all. Can you talk about that a little more?
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, a lot of our attention and the most media attention is on mass shootings compared to any other firearm injuries. Mass shootings are incredibly tragic, and they have far-reaching impacts on the community, mental health, and even our perceptions of safety. But compared to other firearm injuries in the United States, they're incredibly rare. The most firearm injuries are suicides in the United States, followed by homicides. About 1% of firearm injuries is attributed to mass shootings. And so I think that perspective is really important when we want to look at what we are trying to prevent, what we are trying to move the dial on, because the intervention and that prevention strategy is going to be very important, depending on what type of violence we are trying to stop.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Josh is with us in Sparta. Josh, hi.
Hi, how are you guys doing today?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Josh?
I wanted to bring up an asset that's very underused, and that's hunter education. Hunter education doesn't, you know, we target children typically who want to go out hunting.
We lost you, Josh, but I think we take the point, Caitlin. Hunter education, training kids to respect firearms, helping avoid mishandling of firearms, of course, is part of that. What do you think?
I think it's a great idea. It's actually something that we've been doing in my own research, is leveraging firearm ranges and firearm retailers to help educate at point of sale, especially first-time firearm owners. Because a lot of that education, at least where I was in Texas, isn't necessarily disseminated very widely or broadly. And particularly when we're talking about kids, I think this is very important, because the most unintentional firearm deaths are among kids, and that's because they are genuinely curious. When they find a firearm, for example, at the side of the bed, and they look down the barrel, they maybe point it at another kid, and then it accidentally goes off. And so I think that if we take that curiosity away, and if we know there is going to be a firearm in the household, to really educate safe handling, and that may help reduce at least the unintentional firearm deaths at a very young age.
Josh, thanks for that call. We're talking to Caitlin Jedalina, epidemiologist, publisher of the newsletter Your Local Epidemiologist. She says we can apply a public health model to find solutions, lots of solutions for gun violence. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have for our guest about using epidemiology and public health to research violence prevention? Are there things that you think would make different types of gun violence less likely? A combination of things? Do you see efforts in your own community? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. The conversation continues coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our conversation about gun violence prevention. Caitlin Jedalina is with us, epidemiologist, publisher of the newsletter Your Local Epidemiologist. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions for our guest, your thoughts on what might help bring down the number of gun injuries and fatalities in your community, in the nation as a whole. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go back to your calls now. Steve is with us in Phillips. Steve, hi.
Hello. I wanted to share that I'm a lifelong hunter, shooter, gun collector. But one thing that I've done is too many advertisers, magazines, TV shows kind of sensationalize, glamorize killing, or gun magazines, you know, glamorize concealed carry. So I've tweeted big vendors, talked to magazine editors, publication editors, and commented on that. And I think that, you know, that's one thing as consumers we can do is say, not everybody is into sensationalizing killing and making, you know, glamorizing concealed carry. We can get their attention through economics.
Steve, I want to ask, have you heard back from any of the people you've written to or communicated with?
I have. One editor, I actually canceled my subscription to an outdoor magazine that's published in Wisconsin. You know, I explained my concern. He really didn't get it. He called and said, I hate to lose a subscriber. And I said, you know, I'm sorry. I just I don't want to see this kind of stuff anymore. I'm out.
Steve, thanks a lot for calling in. Caitlin, what do you think about Steve's story?
Yeah, you know, I'm disappointed to hear that, but I think it's absolutely true that we really need to leverage gun owners to help figure out ways to make gun violence, reduce gun violence in our communities. I don't think that we are leveraging that stakeholder perspective enough at all. I think the other thing that was brought up was this sensationalism, or and we really need to be cognizant, especially in the media, when we cover, for example, perpetrators of mass shootings. There was one study that I remember that looked at mass shooters versus professional athletes and film stars, and they found that mass killers received more coverage than professional athletes and television stars. And so we really need to work on this as a community as well, and to be cognizant of this bias as well.
Steve, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Talking to Caitlin Jedalina, epidemiologist, looking at ways to a lot of different ways to help reduce the risk of gun injury and fatality in the United States. Back to your calls at 800-642-1234. Dan joins us now in Franksville. Dan, hello.
Yeah, if it saves one life, it'll be worthwhile. Just simple things like she's talking about is a good thing. But the culture we live in is based on violence. I mean, our country goes to war just nonstop. The last 20 years, we've been in like 100 different conflicts that people never even heard of around the world. And, you know, then the parents get into the stuff because they get into the politics, and then their kids are listening to them, you know, well, get the Muslims or get this. You know, a lot of people that go to our school systems are not that educated. Where they don't spend money on education, they're not that educated. So that's a tall order.
Dan, thanks for the call. Caitlin, Dan worried. I think that maybe we glorify war and violence in general in this country. Are there, whether it's that exactly, are there cultural changes that you think you'd like to see?
You know, guns are certainly a part of our culture. There's no doubt about that. And that's why I just don't think it is feasible to say, let's just take away all 330 million guns in the United States. Like that's not going to happen, like they did, for example, in New Zealand or Australia. I will say, though, that there are other countries that are in a lot of conflict as well, and they don't have these problems either. And so a lot of this has to do with access to these guns. And I think that if you want to change that access, it's going to take policy level. Who is getting these guns and why, and how can we change that on a systematic level? It is truly, I think, one of the ways to really move the dial here in the United States.
Thanks for the call, Dan. You mentioned earlier, Caitlin, that the number one cause of gun fatalities in the United States is suicide. Are there efforts you'd like to see to tackle that in particular?
You know, there's a lot of we're working on in the suicide realm with specifically with guns, for example, having smart locks. A lot of research is focusing on that, for example, using a fingerprint, for example, to unlock your gun. I think it's a very innovative approach. I also think that it's that gun access, but we also have a mental health issue in the United States, which is a whole different epidemic we could talk about another 30 minutes about. But we really need to find solutions for people. We really need to get people help if they want it. And guns touches part of that, but not necessarily all of it.
A lot of conversations about firearms in the United States. It's no secret our side versus your side, whichever side you're on, gun control versus gun rights. It seems like you in your work really try to bridge that, to work with gun owners and non-gun owners. How important is that to finding some of these solutions?
Yeah, you know, I think it's actually one of the biggest problems we have in the United States. Take any topic right now, that we are so polarized and do not see the other perspective. And I think that the solution to almost all of these problems we have right now are somewhere in between by us holding out our arms and working together. I understand that everyone's incredibly frustrated. People are traumatized by events, and I get that. But if we want any sort of movement, we need to work together, just like we did with the tobacco industry, just like we did with seatbelts and cars. We can overcome gun violence in the United States. It's going to take time. It's going to take a lot of effort, but it's going to take all of us putting our heads together and having this multidisciplinary approach.
Briefly, as we wrap up, we heard it from Michael via email. He says, it seems like with an epidemic, the answer is frequently to allocate a lot of resources. But with gun violence, Michael writes, there doesn't seem to be the same recognition of gun violence as an epidemic or pandemic. As we wrap up briefly, do you see people starting to recognize and think about gun violence in that way?
I certainly do, but I also know I have a biased perspective. I surround myself all the time with this. But I do think that it's starting to finally gain some sort of attention, and as it should. This is a major problem in the United States. Firearms is the number one cause of death among kids. That is tragic, and we need to find ways to prevent this. And like I said, this is going to take time. It's going to take a lot of conversations, a lot of tough conversations, but it will happen. I just hope I can do all I can to help move that dial in the next coming years.
Caitlin, thanks again for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Caitlin Jedalina is an epidemiologist, publisher of the newsletter Your Local Epidemiologist. She talked to us about applying methods of disease prevention and public health to gun violence.